This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto. Robbie Earl is getting a breather today, so for this episode, we are lucky, or I think we're lucky, to be joined by our good friend Danny Higginbotham. And here are today's topics. Chelsea are dealt a serious blow as Roman Abramovich's assets are frozen by the UK government ahead of the Blues' 3-1 victory at Norwich City today. PSG collapse again in the Champions League thanks to Karim Benzema's second-half hat-trick. Liverpool lose at Anfield but hold on just enough to get by Inter Milan. Man City and Bayern easily advance to the quarter-finals. We recap results at the bottom as the race for Premier League survival heats up. And we look back at the significance of Everton's humiliating defeat to Tottenham. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. Okay, Danny, thanks for jumping in, mate.
No problem.
I mean, as ever, tons of stories to talk about, maybe none bigger than this story that's broken today. I think there was an expectation that Roman Abramovich was going to get sanctioned by the UK government, which has happened. From my point of view, kind of happened quicker than I thought, but it's happened. All his assets have been frozen. His club, Chelsea, is owned by him, so that's another asset that's been frozen. But the government have issued a special license so the club can continue to meet its fixtures and its responsibilities. Let's have a quick chat about that before we get into the game today. And let's just consider how big that story is and what it means for the current and the future of Chelsea Football Club.
It's probably one of the biggest ones that I've ever seen in football. You know, I woke up this morning, obviously, you know, and and it was something that just kept going and going and going. And every time you were looking, whether it be on social media or on the TV, there was something else to add to it. And the problem is, what's the short term?
Right.
What's the long term?
You know, let's try and think about what that short term will look like. We don't know how long, Danny, it's going to be before the government sanction a sale. There's got to be licenses granted and, of course, interest from buyers. It is going to be down to the government if, when they sell the club. But until that happens, with no revenues coming in, how are Chelsea going to continue in the short term?
That becomes very difficult, because if the assets are frozen, then we know what happens with football clubs. They spend so much money every day to keep going. Then you look at the fact of the home games. They can have just season ticket holders.
28,000 of 42,000 capacity.
So straight away,
it's going to look very different.
There's a lot lost then. What happens with the Champions League, as well as in terms of, obviously, if they get through, you know, the home fixture, what happens with them?
Behind closed doors.
Is it behind closed doors? Because the season tickets aren't necessarily included in that. Then you look at the players as well. Then all of a sudden you're looking at, because there's been all that talk, Rudiger, Christensen, Azpilicueta. Your questions are then, it's like, well, they're as good as gone. And, you know, so then you look at it and think other players, the likes of Conte, the likes of Jorginho, that have Silva, who have 1 year left after this season, are they going to start thinking to themselves, what's our next move? Tuchel, what happens with him? There's so much uncertainty now around the club. And I think the difficult thing is that there's more questions than answers, because this has never happened before.
No.
And it makes it very, very difficult. What's your take with it all?
Well, I fast forward to the summer. And I'm very far fast forward, by the way. Summer's only a couple of months away. And that's when football clubs do their business. That's when they trade. Chelsea can't trade. And I don't know. Could they sell the club and have a new owner ready for the summer transfer window? I guess, potentially, the fans will hope that's the case, Danny, because I don't know what's going to remain from this story of Roman Abramovich and his influence at Chelsea over the years, but
my expectation is that new owner comes in, it sweeps it all clean. You know, the three, the network, the shirt sponsor of Chelsea, I'm assuming will come back in as when they can distance themselves properly, finally, from Roman Abramovich. But it's just the amount of time. And like you said, if there's players that would look to sign a contract in this summer who are going to end a contract, well, they can't if it's not owned. Now, then they become a free agent at the end of the season. So, my goodness, it affects the club in so many ways, Danny. And I feel like the UK government, this is a sanctioned club, and yes, they'll try and keep the club going in some ways for the fans and for the cultural importance of the club. And for the fans, of course, that's what the license has been given by the UK government. But that's kind of it. The club, the longer it goes without a new owner, it's going to be starved of money, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's shirt sponsors, other sponsors, TV money, player loan fees, transfer fees, all the usual revenues, match day revenue from whatever, selling tickets, of course. I mean, they're going to be strangled with this squeezing of their ability to be sustainable and to survive, by the way.
I think one of the things you're looking at as well, everybody's talking about, well, you know, the new owners, whoever they may be, you know, they won't be short of attentions in terms of someone that wants to own a football club. But I don't think it's anything that happens in a hurry, because you can guarantee whoever wants to buy the football club, they're probably going to be like, okay, well, you know, you're going to look at me and say, am I going to be a suitable owner?
Well, that's the government, though. It's going to be the government now to talk. And they won't care as much as...
But the people that are buying it will do, because they'll be like, okay, well, what do I need to look at? What do I need to make sure of with this?
It's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm. And I just think that's going to take time. And we know that obviously at the moment they've got this thing over them till May the 31st, which allows them to continue. But then after May the 31st, if the club's not sold, what happens then? Yeah. Which is then the most important time of a season where you could ordinarily sell players to bring money in. Or other clubs look to bring players in. So I think it's a really, really tough time.
That's why we said right at the start that there's more questions than answers right now. And I'm sure the fans, even through social media, are asking me loads of questions about Chelsea. I don't know the answer.
No.
Nobody knows the answer. Just before we move on to the game, just last thing about Thomas Tuchel, the manager. Now, I think it's pretty agreed that he's been pretty good through this, Danny. Like, his interviews, composure, criticism of fans at times. Is there any way that come the summer when the club can't do anything, I know he's on contract, that he tries to wiggle out, or maybe others might, you know, we talked about, there's been a little bit of talk about Man United, that he'd be ideal for them. Is there a threat that Chelsea fans could see somehow the manager leave? By the way, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, who knows what's next in terms of sanctions
and
competitions. But is that something that Chelsea should be worried about?
Yeah. I think so, and also I think with players as well. Players that, you know, there may be clubs looking at players at Chelsea and thinking there might come a time where
they can't buy them. So Chelsea is stuck.
But what I mean is if they get to a scenario where it's like, okay, you can start again, but Chelsea are losing money now. They're losing money from the second that the assets are frozen. So therefore. Right. If that's taken away and they're all of a sudden they're allowed to do things, clubs are going to look around and go, okay, well, we might have given you X amount for that play, but we're not going to now. And because there's still going to be a need for money from Chelsea's perspective, because they're losing money every day. And then, as in terms of your question for Thomas Tuchel, Thomas Tuchel is a world-class manager. And if he finds himself in a position where he can't do anything, he can't improve the team, he can't move it forward, and another big club comes along... Would you necessarily hold it against him if he was to leave them? Arguably not.
No, well, you know what? This story is going to run. I mean, let's just recap real quick. The European Champions, as a football club, has been sanctioned. And the UK government has got every right to shut down the club, to shut it down totally. Now, they won't do that because of the cultural significance of the club, its fans, etc. But... it's still a stunning story of the club, and how it links to this horrible invasion of Ukraine by Russia. So we'll that's going to evolve, and we'll keep talking about it.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the game today, Danny, because we weren't sure how Chelsea were going to come out. I mean, they got the news today, apparently driving to the stadium on a bus. They heard it through social media, et cetera, et cetera. But they started the game pretty well, yeah. And they were pretty impressive on the whole in this game. I know it's Norwich, but I thought they knocked the ball around pretty well.
Yeah, they were very good. The start that they got to the game, obviously, Chalobah getting an important goal, I think, after 3 minutes. But what really impressed me was the front three. Mm. I thought they were excellent. You know, you had Havertz and Mount in particular.
Yeah,
you had Timo Werner. But, you know, it's something that you've mentioned previously as well. The link-up between Havertz and Mount was excellent.
And before Dan as well, like, I know that Timo Werner played now and did okay, but the Christian Pulisic is in this competition. My thoughts going in today was, of course, Pulisic went down with an illness before, but I think the three of them have been really getting grooved in terms of their movement. And it's something that me and Rob have talked all the way through. It's like, what's the best front three at Chelsea? I mean, we still don't know. But are we starting to know, Danny? Ziyech has come back in and he's done really well. Do you think that Pulisic, Havertz and Mason Mount will be the starters in that, or Ziyech two in the good books of Thomas Tuchel to put pressure on probably Christian Pulisic?
Yes, I think it's three out of the four with Havertz and Mount as the two. Right. And then, you know, I think there is then Pulisic and Ziyech. Lukaku is the one there. He was brought in to be a centre-forward. Chelsea are now playing with a false number nine. And you look at the way that Tuchel plays. Tuchel wants his centre-forward to not actually be playing as a centre-forward. He wants him to be as a false nine because then we know Mount can get into that position. Ziyech can get into that position. Pulisic, Timo Werner. When Lukaku plays as an out-and-out centre-forward, whereas I think he plays at his best when he drifts in from the wing, but he doesn't seem to want to do that now. So that, to a certain extent, hampers the two players behind him. And what you have now with this front three is that when Lukaku's not in it, all three of them will take turns in being centre-forward, and I think that suits them all because their movement is so good. And we saw it today against Norwich, the way that they link up. At times, the so-called false number nine is actually the deepest of the three. And from a defender's point of view, it's so difficult to play against, so difficult to mark. Whereas at times when Lukaku's playing, you can throw a blanket over that front three, and it's happy days for defenders at times. So it'd be interesting to see whether Lukaku can get in the team. Do you think he can get into the team?
Well, you know, it's funny, Danny, right? Because I'm going to ask you something now, which is a bit of a strange question, right? Or a thought that's just going through my head. Young players, in my opinion, Danny, when I first came through as a young player, I kind of enjoyed playing with other young players. It almost takes the focus off of you.
Yeah.
Romelu Lukaku is such a dominant personality and character when he plays that demands things. And I feel like Havertz is totally different. I guess so. The question I'll throw it back to you is, when you've got three young, up-and-coming, hungry players like Havertz, Mount and Pulisic, do you think they enjoy, or let's take Havertz out of it, do you think Mason Mount and Christian Pulisic enjoy playing with Havertz as a young, non-demanding type of forward? Or do you think they're more nervous, more anxious playing with Lukaku because they've got to feed him and they've got to, you know he's going to get frustrated. He's got this big personality. I feel like there could be more freedom and it benefits them more playing as a very young, well, not very young, but young front three that look like they enjoy playing with each other. Is that something to consider? Or am I barking up the wrong tree?
No. I think you can look at that a little bit. But the biggest thing for me is that these three players complement each other. So if you look at, let's take Havertz, let's take Pulisic, and let's look at Mount. Pulisic wants to get behind. Okay, Mount is happy to play in between opposition midfield and defence. Havertz is happy to drift wide.
And sometimes in behind. Well, yeah, they're all sometimes going to run.
So therefore, what you've got is three players that are very unlikely to get in each other's way. I think earlier on in the season, you could have three players that would just basically trip each other up. Whereas now, I think there seems to be a scenario where you've got three players, arguably, you know, three of Chelsea's most talented players. They're not playing in the same area. Earlier on in the season, they could be frustrated so much. And what I would also say as well is that with James and with Chilwell out, there's a need for width. And we know that Mount can drift wide.
Width and more movement. Like
yes.
More creative kind of movement to try and get in behind.
Yeah. And at times, I think Chelsea have been predictable when they haven't had both James and Chilwell fit. But whereas now, we'll see Pulisic drift over to the left. We'll see Mount drift over to the right. So they're still getting the width. So they're still stretching opposition teams. So
it just looked like scoring more.
Yeah, because
that's been an
issue
for them. That's been an issue for them most of the season, where it can be a little bit slow. I've talked about the football is so slow from Tuchel that teams get behind the ball, then it's a bit stodgy and
predictable.
Yeah, because it's a little bit slow.
Yeah,
Just finally back on the big story, and I'll get a quick line on Norwich in a second. They won tonight, and everything's good, but as this story develops, do you think this group of players and this manager will stick real close together, like siege mentality of this club's under, you know, it's under all this pressure from all areas. Do you think the group will stick together and they'll be okay? They'll finish in the top four fine. There won't be any fallout. There won't be any players that are like, you know what, I don't actually want to play because if I get injured, I can't stay. I can't stay at this club. Any trouble along the road is what I'm saying. From the squad's point of view.
It's a difficult one because you don't know the individual characters, but there will be question marks over the players that are on a free. You know, and people say, well, yeah, but there'd be question marks anyway, even if this hadn't happened. But I just
The difference is they're unlikely. Well, they can't stay.
Exactly. So it makes them mind up.
They're going to be getting ready for a new challenge, whereas before, you know, you still don't know which way you're going to go until the end.
So if you're Tuchel, what you're doing... I would imagine that he'll probably sit down with the players and say, let's not look too far in advance. Let's look for, I don't know, towards the end of the season. Let's do what we can, and then we revisit things in the summer. And then we move forward from there. Because it's impossible to look too far in advance because nobody knows what's going to happen. You go back to there's more questions than answers. Yeah. And I think that's what it'll be. And from a manager side of things, from Tuchel, then you've got Silva, you've got Azpilicueta, you've got experienced players, you've got Jorginho, Kovacic. Now, it's a scenario that they've never been in before, but the younger players need their guidance and need their experience because there's probably going to be times when they're going to be going to away stadiums and they're going to get stick. It's as simple as that. I think that's going to come hand in hand with everything that's happened, and it's how you now move forward with that. Now, the frustrating thing is that the players, they're the ones that are in the spotlight. The manager's the one that's in the spotlight. So therefore, they're going to get, from opposition supporters, they're going to get the criticism when it's not on them.
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of focus on the club now. Wherever they go, you know, the board of directors and the director of football and Petacek and everybody else, my goodness.
Yeah.
What's going through their head right now? Anyway, quick line on Norwich City. I'll tell you what I saw from Norwich City. I saw a team in the first half that were weak, that didn't believe they could get a result against Chelsea. No confidence in their football, which I guess is understandable, being rock bottom of the league table and minus 42 or whatever it was today going in terms of goal difference. Second half, totally different.
Yeah.
Like, the energy was there. I mean, why can't they start with that intensity? Is it just the nature of who they are that they can't produce two halves where they at least ask questions that gave Chelsea in the second half some problems? Not amazing problems, but certainly asked more questions than the first half, where they were very meek. I think we both agree they're going to go down. Should they be fighting harder for the whole of the game?
I think the idea in the first half was potentially to try and contain Chelsea, to try and stop them. Obviously changed the system, went to a 3-5-2, just to try and be a bit more solid. Then in the second half, he went to 4-2-4, which is something that they've done. They got results. I think they beat Everton. They drew with Crystal Palace and they beat, I'm trying to think who they beat away. They went somewhere and beat someone away and it was a stretch of three games.
They beat Wolves away. They beat Watford away and they beat Wolves away in the FA Cup.
Right, so it was Watford away. That coincided with Everton and Crystal Palace, who they drew against. And Ido was playing up front then.
Yeah, I kind of like that. When those two
worked
up front,
really well.
It felt better.
Yeah. Now, the problem that you've got when you... With Ida obviously being out injured, Pukki gets isolated. That's what happened at times in the first half. All of a sudden, second half, they go to 4-2-4. Pukki gets obviously more support, and then they try and go for it. But I just think from Dean Smith's perspective, he probably looked at it and said, right, let's keep it tight. Then they concede after 3 minutes. And how you want the game to play out, it's gone out the window. Everything that you've worked on is finished, and you have to try and go again. And that's what he did at halftime. But I think you have to come down to the simple facts of when you look at them as a squad compared to other teams, there comes to a point where you go, they're just not good enough.
I know. I'm always fascinated, Danny, though, and we'll wrap it up now on this one. But, you know, when the Championship, they're so good and Brentford are not so good, they both get promoted and Norwich are the stronger team. And yet when they transition into the Premier League, they can't seem to find a way to turn that impressive Championship performance into something that can stay in the top
four. The last thing I'll say on that is that Brentford strengthened their squad in the summer. Norwich lost their two best players. Buendia obviously went, and Skip went back to Tottenham.
They spent some money, but it's not been anywhere near as good.
Not been anywhere near the same. So that probably played a part as well.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Right, we're going to jump to the Champions League right now. We'll come back and chat the other Premier League matches a little later in this podcast, Danny, but the Champions League is what we cover on this as well, and we watch the games, and we had a pretty big story on Wednesday. Real Madrid found a way to come back. They won 3-1 on the night, and of course they advanced 3-2 on aggregate against PSG.
Unbelievable.
I mean, we saw this game, and the first half starts, and Kylian Mbappe looks dynamite. It, with his pace, with the counter-attacking, could have scored two or three goals. They get the first goal through the same player, Mbappe, 40th minute, which put them 2-0 up on aggregate. And the commentators, everybody's saying, well, this is going to be it. And they looked like scored every single time. Messi or Neymar linked up with Mbappe, who's so quick and so skillful with those moves, like reminiscent of Brazilian Ronaldo, step-overs and all that. My goodness. I mean, I know we shouldn't be surprised at what's happened to PSG in the past, but how surprised were you that PSG collapsed in the second half and Real Madrid, with all the experience it's gone, all the champion players, came through at the end?
It was a team against a team of individuals. And that's the one thing with PSG. The talent in that team is incredible, but they're not a team. And the way that they started, they looked to exploit the space behind Carvajal. At right back for Real Madrid, and they did, and that's how Mbappe got his goal. And as you quite rightly said, he had two opportunities before then. And you're thinking to yourself, going into half time, you're thinking to yourself, there's only going to be one winner here because Real Madrid have got to open up more. It means that Paris Saint-Germain can get more on the counter attack. But then PSG just did what PSG did, and what PSG do, it's as though there's a group of players, and it's all about being the star man. They have to be the star man.
Well, when you say a group, let's be specific, because I think it's obvious the star men are players that play in the front areas. And I've just talked about how they look amazing when in the first half, and they have good possession, and they counter so well. But I've never seen three players on a team that literally walk.
Yeah, like they just attack.
They're not interested in defending. Yeah. And I don't know if I've ever seen, have we ever seen a team that's successful with not one, not two, but three players that are your luxury players. And I don't care who else you got on the team. And you can try and set it up to mitigate that with hard-working midfield players. But at some point, Danny, as those front, they've got to help out.
Yes.
If they're not prepared to do that and the manager can't make them do that, which Michel Pochettino can't, then that's the real reason. And it feels bad saying that because they're so talented footballers. But if they're not going to be team players, they're not going to win these big tournaments. Because that's what you need to go all the way. It's not going to happen. Even though the Galacticos stars and amazing individuals, if we never knew before, we know now. You need to be a team to win this tournament, and that's the problem, isn't it?
And I think one of the things is when you look at people say, "Well, at Barcelona you had Messi and Neymar." Yeah, they had Messi and Neymar. Everyone else.
Yeah.
Worked. Everybody else grafted. And that's all the way from the goalkeeper, the centre-back partnerships, the likes of Busquets, Xavi and Iniesta in midfield. They all worked hard. That meant that the likes of Messi could then play the free role and drift into that 10 position. It meant that Neymar could do that. Suarez's work rate, never questioned. And I think, was it David Villa as well, who was there as well? Another one who work rate was incredible. So you can get away with maybe two. Not the way that PSG do, but what I would like to say is that the amount of people that, like, after the game yesterday were saying, oh, you know, Benzema, he now has to be put into this top class of centre-forward. He's been in this top class of centre-forward for years. The only difference is now is that he's able to be the main man at Real Madrid. For so long, he played, you know, second to Ronaldo. Ronaldo loved playing with him because Benzema would do all his dirty work, give him the assists and everything. And you look at the goals now that Ronaldo's gone, or since Ronaldo's gone, that Benzema gets. Benzema is a centre-forward that can do everything. He can play with any other winger, a centre-forward partner. He's an absolute genius. And I don't think he gets credit where credit's due for what he's done throughout his career, because he's been a consistent performer. And a lot of the time at Real Madrid, he's probably not got the credit he deserved from certain people.
Maybe.
Because because he's done a lot of the work for others, yeah.
I think in terms of picking people out.
I know what you're going
to
say.
I know. And people who watched the game must have realised the Luka Modric game that he had and the assist with the dribble through the middle and the clever little reverse ball through the legs that we saw in this game. I mean, he's got to be up there, Danny. And of course, I go back a long way watching this player as one of my favourite midfield players that I've ever seen. Mm. One of my personal favourites, given the way that he plays and given the technicality, and marry that with a work ethic and a desire, and now he's a champion and experienced player, and he still is doing it right now. I think those two players will grab the headlines. Other than some of the younger players will have to be at their best if Real Madrid, in my opinion, are going to go on and really get to the final, if you like. I still think there's better teams out there in this competition. But I think, yeah, full credit to Real Madrid. Carlo Ancelotti on at the end, hugging all the players. I mean, it's amazing what ends up happening as him as manager and stuff. So good news for them. But before we move on, I do want to talk about the fallout for Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah.
And some of the star players, Kylian Mbappe, we understand, wants to go to Real Madrid. Who knows what Neymar's going to do? Who knows how long Messi's going to play on for? And Mauricio Pochettino, a manager that's been super popular at Spurs and the respect that he's got with so many clubs and the possibility of going to Manchester United, I think this is quite damaging for him, Danny.
Yeah.
They didn't win the league last year.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're cruising it this season. They're disappointing again. I think it could be, well, I don't know. I'll throw it to you because I think this could put off Manchester United's hierarchy and the director of football, etc., from going for him.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that too much of a knee-jerk reaction?
No, I don't think it is, because when you look at where Manchester United want to be, Manchester United want to be there with your Chelsea's, your Liverpool's, your Manchester City's. Manchester City brought in Guardiola, a winner, won a lot. Klopp was brought in by Liverpool, had won things at Dortmund. Tuchel was brought in at Chelsea, had won things at various other clubs. Pochettino, I think Pochettino is a wonderful coach, but if you are going for
the best option,
winners, if you're going for someone that has experience of winning things, of winning major titles, okay, I think he's done okay at PSG, but anybody at PSG would be considered a failure unless they win the Champions League. Because we know, not being disrespectful, we know what happened last year in the French League. You know, it was a little bit, it was unexpected. But more often than not, you look at the league table now.
They're going to win.
You know, PSG are going to win it. So I think even before PSG got knocked out of the Champions League, I think there would have been people at Manchester United who potentially want Pochettino looking and saying, right, okay, let's see what he does now from now to the end of the season. Because everyone talks about Manchester United. They've had Mourinho, who's won things. They've had Van Gaal, who's won things. They've had Solskjaer, who hadn't won things. They've got Ragnick now, who's supposed to be this man that's going to connect things. So it looks like Sir Alex Ferguson loves Pochettino. You know, he's always spoke really highly about
him. He still has big influence, Sir Alex.
I think that he personally does, because the problem with Manchester United is that there's not many football people at the club. And when
top in class.
The club. So therefore, when you're hiring someone within the football side of things, you need to have someone that's going to be able to help you. But my fear is that with Pochettino, as much as he could be a great coach and what have you, is that he hasn't won anything. Go back to Tottenham when the year that Leicester won it. That was the year for Tottenham to win it with the players that they had. They didn't. PSG, obviously faltering as well. So it's going to be a huge call, because obviously Pochettino has been mentioned, Ten Hag's been mentioned at Ajax. So Tuchel now, does he potentially come into the frame as well? You've got to think that possibly he does.
All right, another game that's been decided. Liverpool will advance 2-1 in aggregate. They lost at Anfield, Danny, to Inter Milan. Kind of a funny, awkward game for Liverpool. I thought it was pretty even first half. Not too many goal incidents in the match. Then, so you think kind of Liverpool are going to control the game and get to the end. Then Lautaro Martinez on 62nd minute scores a brilliant goal, fades it into the top corner. And you're thinking, wow, this is game on, right? We're thinking game on. And then what was it? Like just a few seconds later, Alexis Sanchez gets a second yellow card. It's 90 seconds after the goal, Danny. And then, you know, it kind of changed things a little bit, even though it's still nervy. A couple of things to unpack there. Let's start let's start with the challenge and how you felt about it before we get on to the bigger picture in terms of the game and the flow and what might have happened. Because I think it helped Liverpool out that they got the down to 10 men for Inter Milan because at that point, Inter tails up. So, challenge, Alexis Sanchez. First one, side challenge, studs up on the calf. Some suggest it might have been a straight red. I'll give you my take after you say what you think on that.
So,
the first challenge.
There's an argument to say that that could have been a red card. I think there is because
So I want to know.
Yeah,
I want to know from you. What do you think?
So I potentially think that if there was cards to be given, if there was an orange card in between the two,
so you're saying no for red.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no for the first one. Okay, no red, yellow card.
Let me give you my take on that real quick. No for me, and the reason it's no is because it ticked a couple of boxes, studs up one box. Yeah. The contact point in the leg, kind of high, second point. It doesn't tick the third box, which is excessive force. And it looks bad, but the actual force of the challenge into the calf or the side of the calf was not enough for it to be red. And this is just my take and watching loads of them over the years and different referees' interpretations. So I thought that was right. The second one, a lot of pundits thought it was never a second yellow card. What do you think on that one?
I think it is a yellow card. Now, what you have to do in this scenario is that a lot of people that are having their opinion, probably like me, would look at it and go, that's not a second yellow card. But then you've got to bring
Given the circumstance where he's won the ball and he can't, allegedly can't pull his foot away to stop the contact. That's the difficult bit.
But the problem where we get caught when we're at times having an opinion on a challenge is that we're looking at it and going, that's not enough for a yellow card, or that's not enough for a red card, or that's not enough for a second yellow. By the letter of the law, and that's what we forget, regardless of we think, oh, that's a little bit harsh, by the letter of the law, it is a second yellow card. For me, it's, okay, he wins the ball, it's the follow-through, he's not in control. I do think that it's a second yellow card, regardless of people looking
at it. So even if you feel that he couldn't pull his foot away, which I'm not sure he couldn't have done that, you know, in a split second to kind of withdraw his foot, that's debatable.
It's the follow-through.
Right, but so because the follow-through did what it did, that's enough for it to be a yellow card. I mean, I'm with you. I think
by the letter
card.
Of the law, and that's,
right.
what,
and that's
we
what
we
have to
remember.
That's what we have to talk about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. That's at times where we can sometimes forget that when we're having an opinion on things. Like, for example, would I look at that and I go, ooh, do I think it's harsh? Yes, I think it's harsh, but by the letter of the law, it's a second yellow card. Right. And that's all that matters, regardless of what I think in that scenario.
So Mo Salah, in general in the game, hit the post in the second half. Mm. It was an amazing block from, I think it was Arturo Vidal.
Yes, it was.
On Luis Diaz.
Who I thought
Liverpool
was
could have scored more goals and could have won the game. But I want to rewind to the moment before the red card. And the Liverpool's a little bit of an Achilles heel, and Klopp's kind of he brushes over it a little bit. Are they, with their end to end and the high line and the press and the way that they get on the front foot that way? But there is risk involved of it. We see it in recent games against West Ham; they got away with it. Do you think that Inter could have given some real issues? And is the vulnerability, the so-called and maybe the slight vulnerability that we have seen? Is that going to be a problem to Liverpool if they want to win all these competitions and get to the very, very top, Danny? Is it going to come back and bite them on the backside, that slight openness defensively to the balls in behind?
I think Liverpool's biggest problem yesterday was the score at the start of the game. It wasn't, obviously, it wasn't 0-0. Liverpool got stuck between a rock and a hard place. What do we do? Do we go for it?
They always go for it. They always pretty much go for it.
When the game's starting 0-0. When the game's starting 0-0, but in the back of your mind, you've obviously played in a game where it's been a second leg and you've been up and it's like, what do we do? Do we go for it? Do we sit back? Well, if we go for it, then all of a sudden we could lose that two-goal lead because they could catch us on the counter-attack. And I think that played into their minds
somewhat.
The
first half was a kind of a nondescript, scrappy
cautious
first half. And maybe to your point,
I think
they didn't really want to go full guns blazing.
Because they didn't want to be caught out.
Yeah.
So that would be where I would go from there. Obviously, the West Ham game, they can consider themselves fortunate. But what I would say,
go on then. So what do you think about the vulnerability defensively? Is it going to cost them?
No, I don't think that it will, because I think more often than not, We're not going to be saying that. And we always say the sign of a great team is a team that's playing badly and can win games. Now, Liverpool didn't always used to be that team. Liverpool used to be a team for so long whilst they were climbing where they didn't win unless they played well. Whereas we're seeing a different side to Liverpool, which is, yeah, you know what? Sometimes they're not winning, maybe getting a little bit fortunate, but they are getting the results still. So it wouldn't overly concern me. Wouldn't overly concern me at all, to be honest with you.
Okay.
What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. I'm a little bit concerned that at the sharp end of everything, that they're gonna drop points because of their commitment to do their thing, which is brilliant going forward. And Andy Robertson's thing and Trent Alexander-Arnold's thing. And I said on the last pod that it's not just about the high line for me. It's about the absence of the fullbacks, Danny.
Yeah.
So they're high. But it also there's a ton of space laterally for players to run into or forwards to run into because there's no fullbacks there. If there's four in a line, and it's not going to happen, four in a line high, you've got four players that can react, can drop off, can cover each other. But there's only two. My goodness, it looks a little light defensively.
Yeah.
So, again, I think they're going to chase down City all the way. It's going to be a super tight race.
Oh, just a bit.
The Champions League is going to be fascinating. I fear that if they're not going to... Well, the stuff they're not going to win is because of this. And listen, the Liverpool fans may say, you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
Because I love the flipping full throttle heavy metal.
Heavy metal.
And it's brilliant to watch. But this season, I don't know. It's just with recent games. Maybe they can clear it up and sort it out. But Liverpool advance. They're through, mate. They're through to the next round of the Champions League. So are Manchester City. They advanced 5-0 against Sporting. 5-0 from the first leg. 0-0. Got to be honest, didn't see too much of this game. Other stuff was going on at the same time. In some ways, Danny, we know City so well, right? And we appreciate City so well. Yes, they didn't find a way. They didn't need to against Sporting.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick thought on them, Danny, as we got on the show, and their potential to win the Champions League. We know what happened last year in the final with the Pep making some changes, etc. Have they got a better chance this year of winning it?
Yeah, there is an argument to say they have because obviously what happened last year, that's an experience. That's an experience for them taking it into this season. One of the things, if you go back to the Champions League last season, is that Pep Guardiola overthought things. And if I remember right, Fernandinho or Rodri didn't start,
incredible,
did they? So I think he overthought things. Can they win it? Yes, 100%. They've got an unbelievable squad. They've got players for multiple positions, players that can play in multiple positions. So yes, they can win it. What I would ask you is that if Guardiola was to leave Manchester City in the summer, this is all hypothetical, if he was to leave Manchester City in the summer, having not won the Champions League, would he have been successful?
Yeah.
Even though he was brought in to win the Champions League.
Brilliant football. Loads of trophies. Amazing entertainment. Amazing centennial points. Consistent. Entertaining. For me, yes, Danny. But I hear your question. And I know that's what they want. That's the Holy Grail. But, I mean, are we saying that his influence at that club and the trophies that he's won doesn't really equal success because they didn't win the Champions League?
No, his influence has been huge. And some of the football that they've played...
You can't say it's not successful, period.
No, but when he was brought to the club, I guarantee you one of the things that was mentioned to him was
of course,
bring the Champions League.
That's what we want, yeah.
So, therefore... I'm not talking about their style of play. I'm talking about as in terms of a level for Manchester City because Manchester City are arguably now one of the best football teams in the world.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
No doubt about that. But in order to get to that higher echelon, you've got to win a Champions League. You have to win a Champions League. I'm not saying you won't be spoken about in the same breath, but that's what it's all about.
And yeah, I agree. Yeah, it is. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I disagree with Pep not successful at the City. I just think that's like crazy to say that he's not been successful. But I get your point that is the echelon, the place that they
next
need
level
to sit
for them.
It is, and they've got close, but they would love dearly, of course.
Yeah.
I think they've got a real good chance this year, even though the striker situation. I mean, it's amazing how they're doing it right now. But anyway, again, they go through. And actually, all the teams that go through, Danny, from this kind of midweek set of fixtures are probably amongst the favourites, which brings us to the last one. Bayern Munich 7, RB Salzburg 1. Bayern go through 8-2 on aggregate. Again, this is going on when the stories happen at other grounds. Robert Lewandowski's a quick fire hat trick, gifted, you know, two penalties, took the penalties really well. I did have a glimpse at this one, and they will be mentioned as favourites. They just will be. Are they the best threat outside of the Premier League, Danny? I know that Real Madrid will feel his momentum now. I still feel that Bayern is a complete team.
Yes.
They've got it. They've got some great options, and they're going forward as well.
Yeah. They have so much
experience.
And, you know, you look at the teams that have now gone through, Liverpool, Manchester City, Bayern Munich, and it's going to be so close. I think the thing is as well is that we can talk about, well, this team's going to be favourite, that team's going to be favourite. Huge teams are going to start playing each other now, which is amazing.
Quarterfinals, you know, onwards in the Champions League is much to watch TV for all football fans, because this is what you watch the game for, to get the giants playing against each other in this competition. I mean, I love it, and I love this time of year now we're going into, because it's so important in terms of these competitions. I don't want to get into that, but
I think at the moment, the way that the team's performing, Manchester City, they have to be the favourites. Now, what happens, because they've come so close in recent seasons, we obviously know what happened against Chelsea, they've been beaten in semi-finals before. I think what would be... Okay, then.
Don't ask questions of me.
No, I'm asking a question of you. I'm asking a question. Role reversal. Who would you love to see in the final? What two teams would you love to see in the final?
I'm not a massive fan of the same country.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
not
with you.
A massive fan of you. That. I would like to see a... Well, I mean, Liverpool-Bayern. Man City-Bayern final?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, Danny. They're all brilliant.
That's one that just sticks
Liverpool-Bayern, I mean, there's so... But I think a Man City, you know, is potentially the best team in England. Don't know yet. Liverpool, I know. Are right in there for that. But that would be brilliant.
Yeah.
Any difference on that? Or?
No, I think I'm with you there. But it's going to be so interesting, because there's going to be teams that you're like, yep, you know what, they're going to get to the final or what have you. And then there's going to be these draws, and it's going to be like, oh, it's such a shame, because this would be... How many times have we said it? It's such a shame, because that would be a great final.
I know.
But that leads to the excitement of the Champions League.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Right, let's jump back to the Premier League, my friend, and I'm going to read out the rest of the games from today, and we'll you pick out stuff that you want to pick out. Southampton 1, Newcastle 2, Leeds United 0, Aston Villa 3, and Wolves 4, Watford 0. Pick out what you want to pick out of that lot.
Leeds 0, Villa 3. I think...
blow, isn't it?
It's huge. It's huge. Jesse Marsh, I thought he set Leeds United up unbelievably well. Against Leicester City, didn't deserve to get beat. So much so that the only thing that came out of it was, why did you do a huddle with your players at the end of the game? As if that really matters single bit. So you're going into the game today, first home game, Bielsa's left, who's a legend at the football club, and you're thinking, right, let's get this place bouncing, and let's get the supporters that are a little bit unsure, let's get them on side.
I believe, yeah.
Bamford comes on, obviously is a big bonus to have him back, but they just never got going. Fans left before the end of the game.
You could hear the boos at the end.
Is it
recoverable? I mean, it is recoverable.
Yes.
It is definitely recoverable. Yeah. I just feel like, what a body blow for Jesse Marsh. Yeah. Got a real positivity about the place, a real high energy start, motivation, tactically. You know, for this, like, I know Villa are great right now. I know they're kind of tricky. Jesse Marsh, he said it in his in an interview I think I read a couple of days ago, where he knew what they'd do, Villa. I knew they're going to play with a diamond. I know that Coutinho is going to play in behind the front two, but stopping them obviously is something very different. And 3-0 again, like, we knew that Marcelo Bielsa, the whole thing was, you can't keep conceding this amount of goals. Yeah. And Jesse Marsh was always going to go back to a zonal back four, a little bit more protection, while still keeping the attacking side in it. This is such a blow. I'm shocked at this result, actually. I'm shocked that it was such a heavy one. Villa, Of course, I think that's three wins on the spin for them. They've now found some real great form, and Coutinho is such a brilliant player. Leeds' chances of staying up, Danny, we know Everton are right behind them. We know Burnley will grind away.
Yeah.
I feel like Leeds are really, really in it now.
Yeah, they are, I think.
Burnley.
Yes.
Burnley at the weekend, I believe. Is it Brentford or Burnley?
I think it's Burnley at Brentford, isn't it, at the weekend? Just need to make sure of that, but I think...
Yeah, you keep talking, I'll get my...
So, if you were speaking to...
It's Leeds-Norwich, sorry. Leeds-Norwich.
Leeds-Norwich at the weekend.
And Sunday.
And Burnley?
Burnley away at Brentford
on
Saturday.
That's right, yeah. So, they're big games.
It's big stuff down there.
I think if you were to speak to Jesse Marsh privately, when he first took the job, I think there's an argument to say that he would have loved his first three games to be away from home. Hmm. Because you look at, it's easier to defend away from home. So we could have got his message across.
Their style is more suited.
So you look at Leicester, how compact they were. And they were really unlucky not to get anything from the game. They play at home today. Regardless of what Jesse Marsh will have said to his players before the game, you get embroiled with the fans. You get taken along by the fans. And I guarantee you, by the evidence, that's what it looked like with Leeds United. They were caught out time and time again. Mm. And... They can still get out of it. I think the one thing they can look at is that Bamford came back today. They've got Phillips to come back. They've got Cooper to come back. That's the spine of the team. But it's going to
be... we're getting to a point now. Leeds at home, Elland Road, Sunday against Norwich.
Must win.
It's a must win, isn't it?
It's a must win.
If they don't win that game, then they're going to be clawing. They're going to be sweating and clawing right to the last day, surely.
Yeah, and what you need to do, and it's not just that, you know, and... Obviously, I've been in the situation myself before where I've been relegated twice. I've had some successful relegation.
That's terrible.
What about yourself? How many?
Well, let's move on.
No. How many?
Well, one's okay.
Oh, here we go.
And the other one was 3 points deducted.
Oh, so
not
two.
Not my fault. One.
So two.
One.
Two.
Well, not really, no.
Did you not get relegated?
Well, the club did. I didn't.
Oh, dear. I'm all right, Jack.
Yeah, we got plenty of experience, all right, in this situation.
So in that scenario, if you're Leeds United and you're playing Norwich, what you need to do, because everybody will be looking at that game and going, let's see how Leeds United reacts. If Leeds get 3 points, all of a sudden, it takes the wind out of the sails of some of the teams that are below them. Mm. But they lose that, all of a sudden, all the other teams take that deep breath, and they're like, okay, look, Leeds are now catchable. And that's where it becomes so difficult, because it's not just about you winning the games, it's about what you can do to the teams below you, or what you can do to the teams above you that you may be able to catch.
Well, you ain't going to catch Aston Villa.
No.
Let's have a little line on them. Heading in a really good direction under Steven Gerrard.
Yeah,
he's still an experienced manager. Mm. He's learning quickly what it takes in the Premier League. They had a little bit of a rough run. They've won the last three. Coutinho on fire. Incredible signing. Is it going to be exciting times for Aston Villa going forward? We know they've got money. They've got very wealthy owners. They've got a high-profile manager that you said earlier is going to attract players.
Yeah.
How excited should be Aston Villa fans be?
Massively. It's a huge football club. I know we're going back a little bit. Talk about Manchester City, Champions League. Aston Villa won the European Cup.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
The history behind that football club, the manager that's there, the money that's there. Mm. You know what it's like to go and play against Aston Villa. Mm. It's an incredible, historic stadium that you can just feel the presence of everything.
You can smell
the success.
It. You can smell the football there.
So 100%, they're going to be a team that have the money, that have the manager, that can attract these players. So... I think things are looking very bright for Aston Villa. I don't personally, I may be wrong, I don't think it'll be long until they're challenging the top six with a good start.
I think you're right. I think if you look at the players on paper, we know about Matty Cash, we know about McGinn in midfield and Jacob Ramsey, Douglas Luiz, I really, really like. They've got attacking options. They've got good forwards and Danny. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on there. You know, Mings defensively, a good goalkeeper, really, really good. Mm. A team today, one of the struggles at the bottom, did get it done. Newcastle United went to Southampton won 2-1. I mean, Eddie Howe. I mean, how good a job, by the way, has he done? I think he got my underappreciated this last weekend.
Yeah.
We do an underappreciated performer. And Eddie Howe's job that he's done from the start to playing a style that is demanded by the Newcastle fans. Mm. And yet it's been working with decent signings, not spectacular signings, but smart, sensible signings that subtly improve the quality. I mean, they're practically there, Danny, aren't they? What are they? 31 points. I mean, another 4 or 5, 6 points, they're good.
Yeah, they're in a great place. When Eddie Howe got the job, and I spoke to him just before the January transfer window, and I asked him, I said, you know, obviously everyone's all this talk about now, money coming into the club, spending the money. He said, the most important thing is I have to spend this money wisely. He said, yes, we want to bring quality players that are going to make our starting 11 stronger, but I've got to bring in players that have the right character and have the right attitude. Look at the players that he signed. Not only are the players that he signed good characters, but they're players that can take Newcastle to that next level. I'm not talking about next level, about we're going to be challenging for the Premier League.
If there's six levels, the next level, yeah.
They've got the players for that. I think he's... One of the things he said when he took over as well, in a conversation I had with him, he said he needed to take the pressure off the players. He said he had a style of play. He loves playing out from the back. Mm. But he said he had
to
draw back from that a little bit. Right. So allow the players to gain confidence and then do it bit by bit. And what I've really liked about Eddie Howe is that you speak about his style, and there's still a measure of that in the way that Newcastle play, but I think he's adapted to the players that he has available. And I know he's only been there a short time, but what he's done puts him up there, in my mind, as one of the managers of the season. It may be a big statement, but I think that he is for what he's achieved in such a short space of time.
Where they were 6 points from safety at the beginning of December, bottom of the league table, I believe, and they're now well clear, like 10-point gap. That is stunning. So you're absolutely right. It's not a huge statement because he's got to be there with consideration of the pressure and et cetera, et cetera. So well done. Well done, Eddie Howe. Well done, Newcastle United. Wow. I mean, I didn't expect, like, with, like, 11 games left for them, that we were... I mean, it's incredible, Danny.
We were looking at Burnley-Newcastle last game of the
season.
I
know. Incredible. Quickly on the others. Wolves 4-0 against Watford. Wolves continue to add so much to the Premier League with Bruno Lage, Danny, in the way that he's playing, the expansive style, the creative style, the attacking players are fit again, and Raul Jimenez scoring a goal in this one. For Watford... I mean, if you look at the league table, they're 3 points from Everton after played more games. Can you see a way out for Watford, Danny? I mean, if you put it in percentage terms, if 100% is definitely relegated, are we at 80% yet for them to get relegated, or it should be less than that? Because I think it should be 80.
I'm not far off. I'll probably say 70, 75. I think the one concerning thing, amongst other things, at Watford is that we know how good Roy Hodgson is defensively.
But where is it then?
That's what I'm saying. That's the concerning thing. That's why it's 75. Yeah. I must admit, when he got the job, I thought, you know what?
They can grind a little bit.
They can score goals.
Yeah,
he will get them defensively sound. He hasn't been able to do that. And that's why, for me, it is 75, 80%. I think it's going to be very, very tough for them. Very tough.
Yeah, me too. Let's rewind to Monday. Spurs 5, Everton 0. Now, you're in the studio.
Yeah.
I was watching this game at home, and I'm like, wow, this could be 10.
Yep.
The openness, the lack of spirit and fight from Everton. I mean, not only are the alarm bells going to be ringing based on where they are on the league table right now and that result, but the manner, Danny... Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether I've seen a team look so great. It was against Leeds when they were at home.
Yes.
3-0.
Yes.
And I remember me and Robbie O'Talker on the podcast saying, that's Everton. Mm. Tons of energy. I think it was a 4-4-2, pretty basic. The fans are up for it. And then to go backwards, and was he lost 5 out of 6 or something?
Mm.
I mean, seriously. This is serious now, Danny, in terms of where they are. And it worried me, and I'll throw it to you in a second. It worried me when I heard Jordan Pickford say about a week ago in the interview, oh, we're different now. We play out the back now. We're more of a position-based team. I'm like, oh, that could be dangerous. Defenders that aren't good on the ball, trying to play out and be patient, this is not a time for that. Not only does it make them vulnerable to turnovers and mistakes, which they're making, but also it's a long way from goal, Danny, when you're playing out from the back and got to get it through midfield. You got to get it. I mean, talk about time for being a little bit more vertical and not get bashing it forward. But that approach worries me. What about you?
Yeah, it does. One of the things that really stood out to me on Monday was that everybody knows at the moment Tottenham get frustrated. Burnley frustrated them. Wolves frustrated them. Southampton frustrated them. And that... Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
Middlesbrough frustrated them as well in the FA Cup. So automatically I'm thinking Everton are going to go there, play like a 4-5-1, look to counter them.
It's a simple game plan.
Everton played so open. They started the game well, and then they got a little bit carried away, and then they just forgot about the defensive side of the game. If you look at Tottenham's goals, Everton's back four is over the halfway line. Now, Harry Kane's like, happy days. I'll drop in I'll go long. We've got Son in behind. And that, for me, was really concerning. Also, what was concerning as well was afterwards when Frank Lampard spoke in his post-match interview, and he was asked about the players. And he said, work ethic, desire, commitment. Anthony Gordon was the one for me today. And I remember me and Tim were in the studio, and we were speaking about it before, obviously, the game had finished, and we're saying that he's one of the ones that stands out. But he's a young player. He needs guidance. And you know what it's like in a relegation fight. There's certain characters that you want playing. I look at that Everton team. They're a team that have some very, very good players. I'm not convinced how many of them can deal with a relegation battle. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. If that was a team that were in the top eight or nine, they got some great players with the ball at the feet. I just think now the pressure's going to be on. Because this Everton crowd, they won't deal with it. You know, they will make it under no uncertain terms that this is how you have to play to get out of this. And it's just how many players can step up.
My experience here, Danny, and I'm sure you've got experience as well, is that relegation fights are for men.
Yeah.
And men that understand the pressure, understand the anxiety, understand the pressure in the stadium, the oohs and the ahs and the boos and the stuff that can take you under. If you've got enough of your 11 willing to take that on and trying to get out of your mind and play error-free, mistake-free football, you can get out of it. Yeah. If you've got too many that are intimidated by that or shy away from that, you ain't going to get out of it. And now, I'm not saying what there is right now. It's so like, I mean, I look at the back four, right? Mason Holgate and Michael Keane.
Mm.
I saw a quote from a former player. I can't remember who it was now. Saying they're a championship back four.
Mm.
Is that too harsh? Because I'm thinking, yeah, I kind of get that. I get that. And a championship back four that can't keep clean sheets and can't be strong and not experienced. There's some young ones back there. Seamus Coleman, of course, granted at right back is experienced. Is that the main problem for Everton? The back four aren't very good.
Yeah, I think it can be the setup. And I think when if you look at things, if everybody's fit, there's probably an argument to say that Godfrey, who I think's a good player.
Yeah, Ben Godfrey, yeah.
Ben Godfrey and Yerry Mina.
Yeah, they would be in.
There's an argument that not just that they would be in, that potentially Lampard could go with a back three, you know, to give them that extra stability. But what I would say, regardless of how you portray that back four, the back three, the centre-backs, whatever you want to call it, I don't think the protection or the balance has been right in midfield in front of them to be able to give them that protection. Yes, Alan, you know, he's one of the main players now, the defensive side of things. But they don't play with two sitters. And I think when you're near the bottom of the league, we saw it on Monday, Doucouré and Van der Beek, they were going forward. So at times, and the fullbacks were going forward, so at times you had the two centre-backs and Alan doing all the defensive side of things.
They need more help.
So that's what I would say. And you have to err on the side of caution when you're in a relegation battle, because we know when you concede a goal, when you're at the bottom of the league, it completely zaps your confidence. So remain strong, stay in the game, and you know you've got a Richarlison, you know you've got a Calvert-Lewin that can potentially find the back of the net.
Calvert-Lewin needs to find some form, needs to get up to speed. Yeah. Still looks a little rusty from his injury layout. A quick line on Spurs. I don't know what's going to be the head of Antonio Conte right now. I don't know where he's at, whether they're the best team he's ever worked with or whether this is impossible and, you know, someone's got to make a decision. It's a good win. They got good players. Get on with it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in terms of top four, they still got a great chance, by the way. They've got 12 games left, Danny. They're only 3 points behind, I think, that spot. Arsenal, they've played more games than Arsenal, of course. But they're still in it. Is Antonio Conte trying to lessen expectations but thinks that this team can make it in the top four? Because if you believe everything that he said, this is impossible and this, you know, same players, different managers. Does he believe that they can do it?
The inconsistency, I think, will be his biggest concern. You beat Manchester City and then you lose to Burnley. And that's the problem. And look at Arsenal. To all intents and purposes, they've got the consistency.
They have now. Yeah.
Tottenham, you don't know what you're going to get for them. I wouldn't be surprised if they went to Old Trafford at the weekend.
Could they get streaky, though, Danny? Could they get on a winning streak? I feel like Antonio Conte, with all that energy, win the next game. Win, you know, and have a bit of a go on a run.
They don't have a... Okay. They don't have a...
You're talking defense or attack?
Attack. They don't have an Odegaard. Who can break? They don't have a number 10 that can...
Kane kind of does it.
He can to a certain extent, but imagine if you had a number 10 that was feeding him. So that's my concern, is that when they play at Burnley, when they play at Southampton and Wolves, who are going to say, okay, well, you can have the ball, but you're not going to be able to get through us. That's where they miss that creativity in midfield. Then they have to open up when they're dominating the ball, and they don't have the defensive mindset in midfield. So that's my concern for them. My biggest concern with Conte is that what happens in the summer? And I've said it since day one, he's a brilliant manager, but he's known wherever he goes, he spends money. And I don't see him getting the finances that that Tottenham require to get Tottenham to where Conte wants them to be.
It's going to be slower. I think he's admitted that it's going to be, it's going to take.
But
more
he doesn't
time.
Spend time.
I just
at
don't,
clubs.
Don't. Yeah, it's just what his reaction is going to be in the reality. Oh, I've only got one new player, good player, but only one, and I got to work with the team. But you're right. That's going to be interesting.
He won't accept playing second or third to any league.
Yeah, he wants to win, and that's great, and he's won. But this is a different. There's some flipping good opponents in this division. Okay, last thing before we wrap up, Danny. Saturday, 12:30 Eastern time on Peacock. Man United, Old Trafford host the team we just talked about, Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, we're getting to the end of the show now. We can't take a deep dive into Manchester United, but I mean, it's almost a separate show in itself. Man United now with the ups and the downs and the rumours and everything else. Can Ralph Ragnick, Danny, pull it together? If you believe him from the City game, it's like, they're great. We're not great. What do you expect? Like, they're the best team in the world. We're not. You know, it happens. Mm. Can he pull everybody back on board, Danny, to have another run now and beat Spurs at home, get on the front foot, get Pogba, get Bruno, get the attacking players out there, maybe Ronaldo comes back, and find a formula to get them? I mean, they're still the fifth place right now into the top four. Or is there something more, that defeat, is there more symbolic, more damaging than what I'm suggesting?
Yeah, I don't see Manchester United getting in the top four. I don't. I think that another team with inconsistency, another team without identity, it's a club that you can... Let's put it this way: if Guardiola or Klopp came into the club tomorrow, you're not going to challenge for the title. And the reason I say that is not because they haven't got good players. I remember at the start of the season saying, "Wow, you know what? They've got an opportunity here to really, chase down Liverpool and Manchester City." But the problem is that without an identity, United haven't had an identity for years. So they've gone out and signed players who were very good players, and there's players within that group that could probably go to another team. And we've spoken about it before, maybe win a Premier League title. There's no identity to the club.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there, right? And that might be valid about the identity. I would push back on, there's a lot of very good players there.
Okay.
I think the reality is that the squad and the team isn't as good as what people think, certainly what people expect. I mean, not to go through every single position, but you've got a back four right now, Alex Telles, okay. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, okay, a lot of money. He's come from Crystal Palace. He's okay. I wouldn't say he's a champion player. Harry Maguire, massive fee from Leicester. All right. Not playing great. Lindelof, all right. Fred, McTominay's good. I like McTominay. And Sancho is going to be good, but not just yet. Rashford's been disappointing. I mean, Ronaldo's older and less. He's not scoring so much. Cavani. Is it that good, Danny?
If I'm looking at that starting 11, the strongest starting 11... Pogba, could he play in a Premier League winning team? 100%. Ronaldo, could he? Yeah, I think so. Fernandes, yes. Sancho,
could Ronaldo?
Yes. Sorry?
You think Ronaldo could be in a Championship winning team right now? You think Jadon Sancho?
Yes.
So you're expecting higher performance from both those two to be able to... If Jadon Sancho is going to be in a Championship winning team, he's got to score 10, 15 goals.
Not
is he ready yet to do that?
So for example, I'm not saying you're going to, but if you put him in a... You put him in a Manchester City or a Liverpool team where, if he was at Manchester City, obviously he was there initially. Yeah. He's not going to play every single week. He would get you, you look at the goals that Manchester City score, they share it around. He would get you 7 or 8 goals for Manchester City, 100%.
You'd have said that about Jack Grealish, he hasn't.
Different players, and what you find is any attacking player that signs for Manchester City, the first season is a we're learning. It's the second season they always take off.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
They've done that for a long time. Yeah. So
that's all I'm saying, Danny. I just don't know whether the team's as good as what people expect it to be. And you get comments about, oh, they're not trying, they're a disgrace.
No, I disagree with that.
They're just not that good.
But are they a team that... So what I'm saying is that are they a team that can finish in the top four?
Well, I think it'd be difficult.
I don't mean now. When you look at that team at the start of the season, is it a team that should
be...
So why are they not there?
Well,
there's no...
Yeah, they should be.
They're
not great, as I said, to be challenged at the top. But, I mean, you bring in Varane, you bring in Ronaldo, and you bring in 100 million Jadon Sancho, and you don't get better. That's, I mean, first of all, it's tough to do and a concern. But
do you know what they're trying to do when you watch them?
Well, I know what Ralph Radnick's trying to do. You know,
but when
it's
different. It, yeah,
but it's not working out, obviously.
Potentially, it could get worse before it gets better.
Oh, blimey. On that positive note, thank you very much, mate, for jumping in for Robbie Earl. I guess next show is on Sunday, March the 13th, podcast for me and Rob, recapping the Premier League weekend. He will be back, the Earl, a few days off. So we look forward to catching up at the weekend. Thanks for tuning in. And it's again, thanks for Danny. And take care, everybody. And bye for now.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.